Good morning, Emmanuel. I am going through a healthy dose of poison ivy. Forgive my little face here. So I get it a couple times a year. Doesn't faze me in the least. I am so sorry that you have to stare at this thing. But if you don't know me, my name is Sandy Kester, and 8 years ago in August, my husband of 32 years was killed in a motorcycle accident. That was so life-changing, as I had been married since I was 19 years old, and I was 50 then, and my birthday would have been within a week of his death. I struggled along in my grief for about a year and a half before deciding that I was going to move membership. As we had been at a church for 27 years, I decided that I was going to come to IBC as a member. At the time, I was a member of another church, and I took the Significant Woman class that Enid Walker, a widow herself, and Pat Ross were teaching. Pat suggested that I get connected and join Grief Share. I had never heard of Grief Share. So she connected me with her friend who was a leader at another church. And I went that very next week to the Grief Share meeting, and I loved it and I felt at home. But they were at the end of their meeting cycle. So they suggested that I go to an Alexandria church where they were starting up a new 13-week biblically-based cycle of classes. It was so impactful that I took the cycle again. And then back at the original church, I took their leadership training course and joined the lead team there in the fall of 2019. I have now been a lead facilitator in three different churches of Grief Share. And while attending IBC, which I joined here in 2017, and have become the facilitator here at IBC's program since the fall of 2022. It is a joy and a privilege to walk alongside folks as they heal in their grieving process. This class will focus on how we can learn to come alongside of others during their grieving process. I do not have the perfect answers to every question or situation, but I have heard enough scenarios of others through the years at Grief Share to know that people want to be helpful and want to say beautiful and spiritually uplifting words, but sometimes the things we say may actually hurt and be painful. I call it that we try to put on our spiritual band-aids. We try to put on our spiritual band-aids. We say nice, trite little things that we hope. So I will be sharing some scenarios and conversations that might be beneficial to you and others during their grieving process. But first, I'm going to share with you what physically happens to us when we grieve. I am not talking about like feeling sad because someone that you were once acquainted with or a former coworker passed away. We're talking about what Webster defines grief as: mental suffering, distress over affliction or loss, sharp sorrow, painful regret. For example, I lost my mom when I was 18 and my father died 4 years later. So looking back, I didn't grieve as much as I did for them as I did when I lost my husband, Peter. We had been married, as I said, for 32 years, and I was a 19-year-old, literally child bride. I was a totally different person when he died, as I was 50 years old at the time. No one told me that grief was literally pain in my body and more. No one told me the things that I'm going to tell you about how grief affects us physically and emotionally. And as I believe I truly didn't grieve my parents' death, I probably stuffed it in and stifled it as an 18-year-old. I didn't grieve like I did for my husband. Before that, I want to tell you that the handout sheets that someone copied for me, they're not in the right order, unfortunately, so I'm going to be telling you which page for taking notes if you wish to. You don't have to. And there are extra notes pages in there as well, so hopefully, they're at the front door. I don't know whose that one is. If it's another one, just spread. So I'll tell you which page it is for the appropriate note-taking. As I said, there's extra pages. Hopefully everybody has a pen. I could not find any IBC pens for note-taking if you wish. So let's begin. The first page for note-taking is called What Grief Does to Us Physically and Emotionally. So number one, it affects our brain. Your brain experiences changes to your amygdala, which triggers the flight, fight, and freeze response, which is why you may experience, or your person that you were talking about may experience getting angry more, feeling like you're going to scream or run away, versus staying and just talking about your loved one. High levels of cortisol are streaming, which affects your hippocampus, which is responsible for the storage and retrieval of your memories. The number one complaint that we have of grievers is lack of concentration, you know, remembering anything, which is called grief fog. I became the queen of post-it notes because I thought I was losing my mind. I had to write post-it notes. Did I talk to the insurance man? I couldn't remember if I had called the phone company. I literally put post-it notes up everything. I did not know what was going on, and this is what's happening, grief fog. But months or years later, for example, we may have a smell memory, or we hear a song and we're right back to where we were at the beginning of our grief. This is called a grief ambush. You could be ambushed at any time for no reason. You could be standing in the grocery store and see your mother's favorite pickles, and there you are bawling, and you know don't know why. That's why. And smells go to the limbic system, which goes again to our amygdala, which is our brain's region for relating emotion and memory. Number two, the heart. Stress can cause cardiomyopathy. When heart muscles become weakened or stunned in response to grief, it may mimic a heart attack. There truly is something called broken heart syndrome in the medical world. It's when the left ventricle becomes enlarged and doesn't function, which leads to temporary decrease of blood flow and a temporary decrease in heart function. It may be because of a sudden surge in adrenaline, which prevents the left ventricle from properly contracting. This generally is temporary, but it can lead to what they call broken heart syndrome. My late husband's grandparents, they'd been married for 71 years, and grandpa died on May 1st, grandma died May 30th. She did not want to live without him, and we always say grandma died of a broken heart. Number three, tears. There are three types of tears. There's basal tears, which moisten and lubricates eyes. They're the clear, thin tears. Number two, we have reflex tears. They contain substances that help us clear the irritants. It contains water, electric lights, and enzymes. Number three, we have emotional tears. They come about for a wide range of reasons. They contain high levels of stress hormones. People have the wrong idea about crying and grief, thinking that it is a sign of weakness or wrong response to the situation, and they try to suppress their tears. But they have many benefits. They are triggered through our parasympathetic nervous system, which helps us to relax crying. Also, shedding tears releases oxytocin and endorphins, which are chemicals that ease physical and emotional pain. So tears can be God's natural painkillers. They are just, as I say, our pressure cooker. It's releasing, and it comes through our tear ducts. Number four, immune system. When we are grieving, it is thought that the stress hormone cortisol is increased and that our body's own lymphocytes, which is our body's natural killers of the bad stuff cells, is decreased, which means we're not creating antibodies in response to infection. So possibly you may get sick easier. Number five, appetite. Grief can alter the body's production of hormones that regulate our appetite and metabolism. It may make it more difficult to eat or even enjoy food. The increase in cortisol, which affects the hypothalamus, can lead to overeating or the opposite, nausea, stomach aches, loss of stomach function, loss of taste, loss of smells. Lastly, number six is sleep. This is what I still struggle with. Grief leads to a state of hyperarousal, a state of alertness, racing thoughts, worries, mental and emotional issues, which interfere with our natural sleep cycle and waking cycles. It could lead to headaches, muscle tension, stomach issues, as I said before. So yes, I still struggle with sleep. When my husband died, it just felt like the world rested on my shoulders. I was in charge of the household and all the decisions, all the finances now. And so my mind was constantly going and I could not quiet myself down to sleep. So that happens frequently. So let's talk about some things that people frequently say, as I call the spiritual band-aids. And you may have said them too. I have said them too. And as I've gone through grief share, I have learned that I was a miserable comforter for many years. And so there are some things that people might say. For example, you might have said, I know how you feel. You don't. You probably have a totally different set of circumstances than they do. Maybe your loved ones were saved that passed away, but maybe theirs were not. You had a good relationship maybe with your parents, but they did not. So they were grieving that they never had a good relationship with their parents, and now there's no more time to have reconciled. Maybe you are financially set, and maybe they never held a job, and now their loved one didn't have life insurance, so they have no one to support them financially. I know of a woman who that is exactly what happened. Her husband worked for Giant for 30 or more years, but he was very negligent about putting in his paperwork for a pension and life insurance, and so he died, and she was in her late 60s. She had never worked a day in her life, and now she was financially and had to figure out what to do to bring in a living. So it could be very hard. So when you say, how do you feel? Yes, I know how you feel. No, you don't. Also, you may have said, you'll be fine. God's with you. They are feeling in that moment like this loss has changed everything about their life. When you diminish that death and say, you'll be fine, you are saying this life ultimately did not matter. It didn't matter enough to knock them off their game. But it's better to say something like, I can't imagine how hard things are for you right now. And I'm going to believe that God is going to give you grace to face each day, whatever it brings. It's better to say something like that. Or I would have liked to come to the funeral, but, and then you fill in the blank with your excuse. It's better just to have said, I'm sorry that you weren't able to come. Because to them, it feels like the world has stopped for them, and it feels like everyone else's world should have stopped too. I have this little song snippet to kind of illustrate this. Do you remember this old song? Some of you maybe. This may be very old. It was actually before my time. But there is a song that says, why does my heart go on beating? Why do the stars still shine? Don't they know it's the end of the world because I lost you? And so that's what I feel like, the end of the world. When I woke up the next morning, the police did not leave my house when my husband was killed, and they did not come for 6 hours to tell me my husband had passed away, had been killed. I fathomed it because he was a man of routine, so when he did not come home and I called the hospitals and he was not there, I knew, you know, that he was gone. But when I woke up the next morning, people were going to work, there were children playing in the street. How could that happen? The world should be stopping. That's what it felt like. My world had come to a stop. So when, to them, their world has come to an end too. Definitely do not say, but you can have more children. Okay. Parents would scream on that one. Another child will not fix this grief or fill that place of when that child died. Also, people may say, well, at least now you can do X, Y, or Z. Like taking care of their long-term sick loved one was a burden to be put off, and now they have freedom to live again. No. It relieves them of that emotional heavy burden, but that's not what they're focused on. They're focused on they've lost this precious soul that they've been taking care of. don't say, don't you think it's time to move on, even if it's been a year or more? Moving on feels like you're leaving your loved one behind. It's better to say moving forward versus moving on. We may not even be mourning that person's death, especially if it were a long-term illness, but we're mourning that our present life is now without them. Don't say, this must be God's will. That sounds like God wanted your loved one to die, or gave your mother cancer on purpose, or happy that your loved one took their own life. Johnny Erickson Tata says, sometimes God allows what he hates to accomplish what he loves. We are learning to reckon the reality of God's providential guidance of all these things by resting in his confidence that God is working out his plans for his creation. And one of my favorite quotes that I quote frequently in Grief Share is, God's sovereignty is the pillow we lay our heads down on at night. I don't know why God allowed this loved one to pass on at that time, and you don't either. So don't try to come up with a solution. Don't say, just call me if you need something. Grieving people are not going to call you. They need you to figure out what you can do that they need and just show up and do it. Don't wait for the call. Call them. Tell them, I'm going to go to grocery shopping on Thursday. Give me your list, or I'm going to pick up a few things for you. Or call and say, I'm going to come on Thursday. I'm going to mow your lawn. Or I'm going to come over and help you do your laundry or help you do paperwork. I had three close friends that came with buckets in hand because they knew I was having all this family over, and they scrubbed my house. I mean, scrubbed my house. And I had to do numerous chores, and I left them. They had gone in my closet and got my laundry out and did my laundry, and they had beautifully folded even my underclothes and left them on the bed. I was horrified, of course, but I was like, what they just did, because they knew it had to be done, and eventually I would, you know, run out of them, and then I would wash, but that wasn't my priority, so they just did, and that's what grievers need. We need to understand that when you say, call me if you need anything, it's not helpful, because sometimes people would get their feelings hurt when they weren't called, which forces the griever to manage now this relationship with this person's feelings in addition to everything else that they have to deal with. As one griever said, offering help without taking the initiative practically pushes responsibility onto the person who's grieving and adds yet another burden. So, also, the trite little saying people have said, I guess God needed him in heaven more than we need him here on earth. That's a ridiculous sentiment, which trivializes the griever's sense of loss as we're trying to sound spiritual. It's not. Or, God took him so that, fill in the blank. No, it's better to say something like, I know we'll never understand exactly why this has happened, but I'm praying that, and then you can say, anything. I'm praying that God gives you grace, patience, calmness. Okay, so this next section, I'm going to talk about from a book by Nancy Guthrie called What Grieving People Wish You Knew. It's a great, great book. Nancy Guthrie and her husband, if you don't know her, she's a Christian author. She and her husband lost two babies within that they were less than 6 months old to a genetic disease, and so they were actually part of the Grief Share program. So she has written so many good books, Bible studies, and this book, What Grieving People Wish You Knew, I'm going to take this next section from, and we also, FYI, sell it in the bookstore downstairs. So this is part of note-taking if you wish to take notes. Number one, What Grieving People Wish You Knew. Let the griever take the lead. They may relish the interaction with people who come around them at a difficult time. Others may be totally worn out and overwhelmed and barely conversant to express anything. So let that griever take the lead of how when you come over or talk with them. Number two, don't assume. You don't know how they feel, as I said before. You don't know how they feel or are doing with their grief and their experience. There may be physical needs that they have because they've been taking care of their sick person for a long time and they didn't pay attention to their own physical needs. There may be financial needs, especially for the widow. So don't assume that you know what the situation. Especially with the physical, there is something called caretaker's dementia. Especially in older folks that take care of their older spouse or whoever for long term, and then once that person passed away, their mind sort of, not falls apart, but basically is not holding on anymore, and they start to develop caretaker's dementia. Also, don't compare. We tend to compare pain. Oh, this must be harder than that, or it must be worse than that. You can't compare pain. It just hurts. It just hurts. So don't compare your pain. Also, when you're talking and visiting with them, don't feel the need to fix. Sometimes people just need to wrestle with the ugliness and uncertainties of life, then feel better and move on. It's okay for them to go through their grief. You have to go through the grief. One of the first things I say when I begin my grief share classes is I don't have grief share pixie dust to take away your pain. Most people who come to grief shares is they want to get out of pain. They just want to do anything to get out of pain. But unfortunately, grief is a process and you have to go through it. I was married for 32 years. Did people think wrongly, I'm sure if they did, that I would get over it in a few months or even, a year? I'd been married 32 years. So I didn't just, forget that he was in my life. So, don't feel a need to feel that you're going to fix it. When you tell them that they are not alone and God is with them, it may make them feel worse because it's like they have a spiritual problem on top of everything else that they are going through. Grief is like going to the basement on a sunny day and pulling the blinds down, and all you can see is that darkness, even though truly it's sunny outside. It's like that all I'm focusing on every day was that grief. That's all I physically was thinking about and emotionally, even though it was a perfectly beautiful day. And yes, God was with me and my family was supporting me and friends and church. All I could feel around me was the darkness and the grief. Don't be in a hurry. They don't have to rush their grief to get over it. If they were married like myself for so long, what was a two-man team is now a one-man team. And it was going to take me a long time to adjust to all the things that my husband did, in our marriage that now I was going to have to take over as well. Don't make it about you. I find myself doing this very easily. We humans love to make mental connections like, I remember when that happened to me, or, when I lost my mother, this, that, and the other. But sometimes it may feel less like a connection to them and more of a one-upmanship. So be careful. Again, listen more than the talking. Don't tell them what to do. Now, all your they may need everything that you would recommend them. Go to this doctor if you're not feeling well, and let's get this, and let's do. They may need all of that, but they are not looking for your advice unless they ask for it. Just say you never need something like you never need to hide your true feelings from me. I won't judge you or tell you what to feel or what to do. You can always just be who you are and who you need to be. I'm safe to be around. So be careful about telling them what to do in their life. Acknowledge their grief. We want to sense that person recognizes how significant our losses. We don't want to be dismissed or minimized. For example, my husband died in August. That November, I went with my husband's family for Thanksgiving, and no one. That whole first Thanksgiving, not one person talked about my husband. And so I learned over the years, you have to give them permission to talk about their loved one, that they can open up. I know we're afraid to make mention of things, that we're going to, you know, open Pandora's box and they're going to cry. So be it. This is ever in front of them. But to not say anything, we'll come to some more conclusions about that. But yeah, that is more hurtful. Don't talk about what could be worse. You may say, it's better to say, I had a taste of what the, for example, if you've already gone through some grief, you could say, I had a taste of what this was like going through my grief. But of course, I don't presume to know exactly what your grief is like. So you're acknowledging that you may have gone through the same thing, but you're not saying, but mine was this and yours is, it's okay to say, you know, I know I experienced that grief too, but I don't exactly know what yours is like. Don't be put off by the tears. You didn't make them cry. You simply brought to the surface what was already there anyway, and that needed to be released. Recognize that you have earned a trust place, that they could be willing to share tears in front of you if they do cry. Don't assume they need to be cheered up. You can say, your tears are beautiful. They reveal how deeply you love. Or, you must have so many tears that want to come out. You can always cry in front of me. Also, something like, truly, and put their loved one's name in it, truly Peter is worthy of a great sorrow. Number 10, don't ask potentially painful questions out of curiosity. Don't ask if their loved one was wearing their seatbelt when they passed away, or was a smoker, or was living with someone outside of marriage, or even about their spiritual condition. Don't ask potentially painful questions. Again, refer to number 1. Let the griever take the lead in the conversation. And about not contacting them and talking to them, this quote from Nicholas Waldorf, your tears are salve on our wound, your silence is salt. Don't be the salt to their wound. This next section I'll check my thing. How to do something definite for them. Some ideas of what to do, some definite things to do. For example, you could say something like, do you need any suits or dresses or dry clean for a funeral? I'll come over and do that for you. Do something definite. Or, I'll mow your lawn on all the month of September for you as you, you know, get your service and gear or whatever. Or I'll keep your pets while you travel away to the funeral. Or, you know, I'm not rushing you, but I'd like to help you when you need to clean out their clothes from the hospital room or the house or wherever. Or if you want to go to the graveside and visit, I'd be happy to go with you. One friend went with me and held my hand and stood at the aftermath of the accident scene of my husband. And I felt for closure that I needed to go there, and she came with me and held my hand, and we stood looking at the spray paint body silhouette that the police had done on the ground, and she just stood there with me. I'm going to tear up thinking about her. God bless Kathy. That was hard for her. That was hard for me, but I felt as closure. I needed to see where it happened, to understand how it happened, and that's a true friend. When we hear of a loss, our brain searches for connection, as I said, a comparison to fill up that awkward silence. And we tend to blurt out the first thing that archived as I know a family who had that similar, you know. We want to demonstrate that we're familiar with the situation. That's what we're doing. But to the grieving person, it feels like a subtle effort to diminish their loss or, as I said, one-upmanship. Better to say, we can't compare your loss. I know it just hurts, and I'm sorry that you have to hurt. Try not to say this. It's so easy. We all say this. How are you today? How are you? They're terrible. That's how they are. They're in pain. They feel lousy. They're not sleeping. They're possibly crying like crazy all the time. They're horrendous. Even with a strong faith, I quote from Gregory Lord's book. He lost his eight-year-old son to a car accident. He said, "Without God's presence, the darkness would be midnight black, and the grief would consume instead of just debilitate." Did I think that I've known the Lord since I was 8 years old, and did I think that my faith meant that I wasn't going to be in pain? I was wrong. God allows us to go through that grieving process as He sanctifies and molds us. And we suffer like Christ suffered, and this is a fallen world. So yes, it is going to be painful. And as I said, you have to go through the grief journey. You can't go around it, or you can stuff it, but it'll come out in other ways in your life. So they need to go through it. Your friend or whoever has been knocked to their knees and their world has been rocked. Most in deep grieving will even question their faith. Sometimes without the ability to hold on, it feels like you've lost your faith without realizing that it really is God holding on to us, holding us up as we are just dead weight in this juncture of life. When you're there and you say, or when you're there, say something like, "Tell me about your mother. What was she like? What's a favorite story you have of her?" Be prepared to listen. Just listen. They love talking about their loved one. They do not want to talk about their loved one. Double negative, bad grammar. But they would love to talk about your loved one. Be that friend that's willing to just listen. Even though it's a typical response, I would recommend don't send flowers. Most folks don't want flowers dying or plants that they now have to take care of during their grieving time. Food may be better if needed, but they will get an onslaught of food generally at the beginning. Possibly think about waiting and sending meals a week or more after the fact. Possibly even saying, "May I bring you a meal and stay with you and eat dinner with you tonight? Let's chat." They may be lonely. The house feels empty now. At the beginning, they'll have generally lots of support, friends, family, if they're involved in a church. And then as the weeks people go back to their normal life, now the house feels very empty and lonely. So to say, "Let me bring you a meal and stay with you," that would be such a blessing. I worked for a funeral home for 13 years. This is my thing about flowers. Depending on how the contract is written with the funeral home and the flower place, they will get the flowers there within 1 hour of the service. So generally the family is already there in the service, and we're still rushing in the flowers at the last second, right up to the last of the service. And then if they even come after the fact of the or after while the service is going on, we'll just put them in the hallway, and then the funeral staff goes and pulls the cards before the service is even over, so the family will not connect your specific flowers to that. They will not. So if you get a thank you note, and hopefully the funeral home is good and gives you the stack of cards for you to send a thank you, you will not know what flowers. They will not know that you spent $300 on these beautiful flowers. They will not necessarily know. And then they generally go graveside, and then they, you know, are left. So that's the dirty little secret of funeral homes. People, it's just a typical response of sending flowers. But it will not relieve their pain in any way. It's a nice gesture, but there are others. I remember my niece sent me an edible flower arrangement that looked like flowers, and it was fruit. It was beautiful. It was so helpful because people were coming to eat, and we were eating this, and it was that type of thing. So anyhow, I just would recommend not sending flowers. There's better choices. If you've never met the lost person, you could say, I can't wait to meet whatever their name is in heaven. I bet we would have gotten along, you know, famously had I known them. Unless your friend indicates that their loved one's probable lack of salvation, it's better to say then something like, they sound amazing. I wish I could have known them, to encourage them. You need to understand that when you say, call me if you need anything, it's just not helpful, because sometimes, as I said, they're going to get their feelings hurt if you don't call. Why didn't you call me? I can't remember how many people tell me, call me. I can't even remember, couldn't even remember who had said that to even call them to say, yes, I did need help. Another page, what to do when you show up. As I say, listen more than talk. Let things go. This is very important. Let things go. Even if they say things that don't sound biblically right or even kind about someone, it's the grief talking. What they are doing is lamenting. As Dr. Larry Crabb says, lamenting is when we're telling God, let me tell you where I am right now. So sometimes they're not saying things that are, you know, biblical, and it's not time for us to school them during their grief. They're just hurting, and they're saying things that they might not normally say when you talk with them. Weep with them. It's okay. It's okay to laugh with them, too. If you have a funny story about their loved one, tell it. They will love to hear that. You are not making light of the death. You're sharing, as they say, shared joy is double the joy, shared sorrow is half the sorrow. You're sharing with them something funny about that person, and they will love to hear that. It's also okay to leave a message on the phone, on their phone, of love and support and remembrance. But add, this is better to add, please don't feel obligated to call me back. When one day I had to go out and do chores, and when I got home, this was probably the very next day, I think, after Peter's death, I literally, my machine said so, had 52 messages of love, support, and admiration for my husband. Do you think I could call all those people back? No, I could not. So it's please add that. Don't feel obligated to call me back, but it's okay. You know, call them, and if they're not able to answer the phone or they're not there, then please leave a message of support. That's a blessing. After your visit, send a note. And then another one the next week, and then another one later on. Just a couple of weeks, just say, I'm thinking about you. I love you. I'm praying for you today. I remember Peter. That kind of thing. That really is very thoughtful. Go through your photos and share any, if you have, of their loved ones. They would love to see new photos. Think, they've probably gone through their photos, trying to remember and being close to their loved one, and for you to bring in a new picture, they will relish that. As I said before, bring food or start a call to friends to schedule food to bring for the coming weeks. Also, you could just bring basic supplies that they may not have time to get. Paper towels, toilet paper, paper plates, paper products. Having paper products, it's telling them it's okay not to have to do regular dishes and have to wash and take care of things. And they never know, you know, who will show up. So having the paper products there was very helpful. Consider the children in the family. Take them out so the parents have time to go to the funeral home or get their hair done or just even take a nap. Children are definitely a hard thing to deal with during grief. And say to your friend, I'm going to come over and take Johnny and Susie. We're going to go to the playground for an hour so you could have a nap or do something just for yourself will be a blessing. If you're financially able and you are aware that the person who passed away was into special causes, donate funds to those causes that the loved one supported in their name, as long as it's not something like unbiblical. I donated to missionaries that my husband, he was a missionary kid, and knew many missionaries around the world, and I donated Peter's memory to them, and they felt so connected. They weren't in the States, so to have something connect them to Peter, because they weren't able to come for the funeral, that just felt special to him, and they knew how much he loved missions. Think about if this person is a widow or widower, and they may never have had to do something before. For example, like an elderly widow, a widower may never be have been in charge of cooking before, or even going to the grocery store, or even done laundry. Offer your services to him to come over for, or to bring him over for a meal for once a week for a month. Or a widow, maybe offer to pick her up for church or hair appointment or a doctor's appointment if she didn't drive anymore. One help to your friend is to mention, maybe not within the first weeks, that IBC, as I said, has a grief share program. And I do have some flyers in the back if anybody wants to pick them up. We're starting a new session this September. But we have a grief share program here, and you could say, I'd be happy to drive with you and sit with you in the program until you feel comfortable, or tell them that, you know, grief share, they'll be surrounded by a group of grievers who are not afraid of tears, fears, anxiety, anger, questions, frustrations over grief and loved one's death. This is what grief share is about. We come amongst people that are sharing our grieving, and we're not afraid of tears. We tell them, this is a safe place to cry. Other people may not want you to cry in grieving. Grief share is the place to cry. And so, you know, tell them about grief share. You won't want to tell them the very next day. Give them some space. But that will be one thing. Don't be in a hurry for them to get over it. We would not tell someone who had a physical injury to get over their pain or to hurry up, but we subtly at times do this with emotional healing. We wonder when they're going to smile again and be fun-loving again or be interested in the things they used to love doing. Yes, true, our desire for the griever is to be back to their old self. It's purely out of love. We don't like to see that person in pain, but it may also be out of selfishness because sad people are not fun to be around. So it makes us feel uncomfortable to be around them, and we want to fix it, but we can't fix this one. Just be patient for the long haul. That's what Christian friends do. We die to ourselves. So lastly, in your little packet, I have just a quick synopsis. I'm not sure where they put it. I think it's the very last page of all the things that Nancy Guthrie had recommended what to do for grieving people. Number one, as I said, just show up, do something for them. Don't ask, just do. Number two, don't compare their loss to yours or others. Just acknowledge their loss. Three, they still want to talk about their loved one. Use their loved one's name. They love to hear their loved one's name. And fourthly, they need time and space to be sad, and you will be that person who won't rush them through. Also in the packet, I provided just some things, just, you know, to help you. You know, what do you say on a card? What do I say? You know, it just seems so trite, all the things. So I just included some little things that they had recommended in the book and some verses. There's plenty of verses that I'm sure that you can find in concordances about grief and encouragement. But I provided some there for you to put in cards. Hopefully that will help you. And so I'm going to take a moment for any questions that you have for me, and then we're going to turn it over to a panel of some people that are going to answer some questions. So anybody have any questions for me? I may not have great answers, but we'd love to hear it. Anyone? Okay. Okay.
You said, you know, just do things. So how should you, I guess depending on how well you know the person, but like if you're offering to do something and they kind of, you know, because there's this idea like, oh, I don't want to accept, it's kind of a natural feeling, like I don't accept help, I can do it myself or whatever. How hard should you push? You're like, oh, I'm going to come over to your laundry. No, really, I'm going to come. I mean, is that...
I mean, I would say I probably wouldn't be comfortable with a neighbor down the road coming in doing that, but this would be someone that you're close enough to and say, you know, I'm going to come over, we're going to spend some time together, and I'm going to do your laundry while you sit there and let's chat, and I'm going to do the laundry, or I'm going to take your kids out, or, you know, whatever it is. It depends on where you are in that relationship, you know, so if they're going to allow it. And, you know, out of false modesty, we all say, oh, no, you know. And sometimes, yeah, you have to push. No, I really am. I'm going to do this. And stuff like the lawn mowing, you know, don't even ask where theirs is. Bring yours, you know, that kind of thing. When my friend said, what am I going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I have all these people coming. I don't even, you know what I need. And then an hour later, they showed up with the buckets. They brought everything. The sweetest thing is that was my birth date that they showed up, and when they came in the door, they sang happy birthday to me as I stood there with their buckets, and so we all had a good cry, you know, about it. But then I had all these things that I had to go out and do at the cemetery and whatnot, and so they just stayed and just did. So it was a shock to see them at my door, but they just did. So again, I would never have called anybody. I was too cheap to call a maid service. But, you know, we want that to clean house before all these people are going to, you know, come in for the funeral. So, yeah, you push, but you don't, you know, you don't want to be rude. It's more the point that they can't think even all the things that need to be done. They're so flustered. And so you're going to say, okay, I can't do everything for you, but I can come in. I'm going to vacuum the day before all your family comes, or, you know, do whatever. And so hopefully, yeah, that they will allow you to do, you know, for them. All right, someone else? Yeah?
Do you have a list of things sometimes, you know, they can't think through what needs to be done, but for us who are trying to help people, is there a list of things, a checklist to say, these are some things that are really important, like they need food, they're going to need cleaning, they're going to need, you know, is it some of the books you've recommended, do they give?
I have no, but I bet, you know, the internet, I would have that. None of my books have a list like that. That's a good one. I'll have to look up that one myself, because... again, sometimes we just get so myopic and think, you know, maybe just this one thing, or maybe I only know them in this way, so we always go out to coffee, so I'll bring her more coffee, and, you know, that may not be something they need.
Like if they had a pet or something, the pet could be neglected.
Yes, exactly.
Could be neglected. I mean, I'm just trying to think of the top 10 list or mm-hmm. important things that probably need to be dealt with on a daily basis.
Gotcha. Michael has his finger up. Do you have a list, Michael?
I have no, but here's what I just went through something very recent with a friend, not of death, but open heart surgery, and was, you know, in recovery. So here's the way, for both of these questions, here's what I did. I sort of looked at my own skill set. I said, what can I do? So I sent the guy a text. I said, hey, Mark, here's my skill set. I can clean your house, take out trash and recycling, or mow your lawn. Okay, you let me know. And he got back to me and he said, wow, you would come cut my lawn. I said, of course, I'll come cut your grass. So that's what ended up being, you know, so rather than a list of 400 different things and trying to figure it out, I said, here's my skill set, here's three things, happy to do it, you let me know. And then that he called me on the lawn cutting, so.
That's good, yeah. Excellent, that's yeah. Good, yeah. I would not be able to come over and help you with your computers, that would not be me. But yeah, I could come over and clean house and, you know, do that kind of thing. I'm a great grocery shopper and I cook. I would bring you meals for a month, you know. That's excellent. Think about what you can do and able to do with your schedule. I'm not saying change your whole family, you know, to accommodate that, but that would be what you need to say. What am I willing to do with a happy heart, you know, for them? Okay, anybody else?
I do have another question.
Okay.
Before somebody passes away or something, is there things like getting in contact with family and friends? All of a sudden, somebody passes away, and now you've got to get in contact with with all the relatives and those things, are those proactive things that can be given to us? Like if somebody in our family passed away, these are some things you need to be prepared for. Like if you pre-plan a funeral or something, mm-hmm. you know, these are things that need to be.
Yeah, at the funeral home, they passed out booklets like that I don't have any. But yes, those are, and I'm sure, again, internet, I wish I could think what they're called, but pre-planning guides for funerals, yeah, they would definitely, a couple of people gave it to me, and that were very helpful, because I did my check-off list, who do I need to contact with, and all those things, because when you're in the midst of that grief, you're a mess, you don't know, and the very next day, I had a nephew come over, and he's like, have you even called his work? And I'm like, no. He's like, you need to call their HR department so you can get your, you know, all the, and I'm like, I didn't even know. I don't even know. And he's like, just go on the internet, go for the company, look for the, you know, 800 number, and let's start from there. I'm like, great. You know, I was like so messed up. I didn't even know my husband's boss name to even tell them that he was, you know, had passed on. So that kind of thing. So yeah, that's a good point. I don't have a list, but there are books out there and internet lists, checklists for pre-planning for funeral would be great. I'm going to ask my panel to come up. I've invited some friends who've been part of Grief Share with me to come up to take a seat. And I'm going to ask them some questions so it's not just me talking. Okay. So again, panel, this is brief. We don't need long, you know, long dialogue, just briefly. If you could introduce yourself and your loss and what brought you to Grief Share. Michael?
Michael Bailey, and I lost my wife at 25 years, 2 years ago, June 6, 2021, after a two-year battle with cancer.
Okay, thank you. Helga?
I'm Helga Stones, and I lost my husband 5 years ago. I didn't lose him.
There we go.
We were married 56 years.
Mm. Thank you. Melanie?
I'm Melanie Bailey. When I came to a Grief Share, my cousin and her husband both had fourth stage cancer, and I was walking with them during that time, and then they both passed away within months after that. And then in addition, I was grieving the loss of my 19-year-old son, who died many years before, but I needed to still work through that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Karen?
My name's Karen Winger. I lost my mother-in-law in October of 2019, and then my son, my 25-year-old son, in January of 2020.
Thank you. Bob?
Ditto. My mom and then my son. One of the things that brought us to Grief Share was God's planning. I remember about a week or so before my son passed away, going down to Fairfax County Parkway for a community church and saw a sign there that said Grief Share. And it was, I don't know, it pre-planned it for me. So we wound up there, just Grief Share works.
Yes, I was a facilitator at Burke Center for 2 years there, and that's where I met Bob and Karen. Yes, and they're married, by the way. That's why he said ditto. Alan?
I'm Alan Lund, and I lost my wife 5 years ago. And I learned about Grief Share at her memorial service when somebody mentioned it to me.
Thank you. Okay, so the question is, we're talking about miserable comforters, and what I mean by that, where people try to say nice things to encourage you, and it actually hurts you. I will share with mine. My husband died in August. About a month or so later, my brother-in-law was trying to encourage me, and he said, oh, you're so friendly, and you're involved in church and everything. Don't worry, you'll remarry really soon. It'll be okay. No, I wanted to knock his head off. You know, how could you forget Peter? I've been married 32 years. Why what I want to even consider marrying. I know he was trying to encourage me, but that was very painful. Now, providentially, he was right. I married a wonderful man a year ago, 8 years into it. He's my IT guy. But you don't say that a month after a loss. So that's what I consider a miserable comforter. He was trying to be kind. He was trying to encourage me that there will be better days ahead. It didn't feel that way. So, Alan, you have a miserable comforter story where somebody tried to help you and instead it was quite painful?
Actually, I don't.
Oh.
I do have some suggestions, or one main suggestion. Don't in any way, shape, or form try to use the passing of somebody as a way to actually gain something for yourself. Don't say, you're not using that parking space anymore, do you mind? Or, you have more space in your house now, I have a friend who needs space. Okay, that's a big no-no.
That's what happened to you. Yeah, people lose their mind, yeah, honestly. Okay, Bob or Karen, you have a miserable comforter story?
I came to the point that the next person had told me, be strong. I was going to show them how strong I was. But fortunately, I've been going to grief share, and I've learned to say, I'm not strong today. Mm-hmm. And you can't make me be strong. Please go away.
Yeah. Excellent. Karen, anything different?
I don't really have any miserable comforter stories, just maybe awkward ones. A couple years after our son passed away, I was going into the doctor for my well woman check. Mm-hmm. You put things off. It had been 2 years. I had met the doctor before, and she happened to remember that I had 2 children. And she's making small talk and brings it up. So now I have to say, and I was having an all right day. I wasn't going to break down and cry or anything. But this poor woman, I felt so bad for her because she did not know what to do. She just, this like, I didn't know her well enough for it to really be appropriate for her to hug me. But she felt it was necessary, like she had to do it. She offered me a water, like that was going to fix it. Don't feel like you've got to fix something. I mean, she just so desperately wanted to be able to do something, and it was so awkward. And I felt
exactly.
So bad for
right.
her. And it was, yeah.
All right. Melanie, what about you?
With me, I had a dear lady who came to visit, and she was there to comfort me. And this was at the death of my son. For the next half an hour, 45 minutes, I had to hear her story, because she started it off by saying, I know exactly how you feel. Exactly how you feel, because she had had this loss herself. And, grieving so hard, after a while, I just had to sit back. And I ended up being the one to comfort her. So for all of that time, I became a comforter, and I had to just stuff it in. And what I learned from that, and just other times where people have just tried their best to be there and be understanding and being compassionate and all the good things that come from your heart, I had to learn to forgive. Forgiveness just became the second thing, because people stumbled so much. Mm-hmm. And I had to look at their hearts.
Yes.
And
that's good. Excellent. We talk about that in grief share, that forgiveness during this time has to be big. Helga, what about you? A miserable, comfortable story?
I do. There are several, but one really stands out. And as a sweet friend, we had breakfast together, as usual, maybe three times a year. And I tried to tell her what the Lord had told me to be courageous and to how he had comforted me, and I shared that with her, but maybe was not quite theological interpretation, and she said, oh, we're not going there, we're not going there, and that was the end of the conversation. Mm. And I was kind of heartbroken, but reading scripture, I think,
sometimes the Lord teaches us certain things that may not be theological accurate, but at the time, if it calms you down and it satisfies your heart, it's comforting. So I don't think we should criticize the person that shares with us.
Right. She was in a hurry for you to get over it because I used to say that people didn't like to talk to me because I had widow cooties, and it was going to jump on them, especially other women, that they were thinking, this could happen to me. So I don't want to talk to her. It might happen to me. So it's probably like she didn't want to talk about it with her. Michael, what about you?
I don't know what I could have. I mean, I've had it all. I've had all of it from a friend who had marital problems and came over and said, hey, you have all this room in your house. You know, I need to stay, you know. So my wife and I thought, well, and it was a Christian brother, and he thought, well, the discipleship, Michael, I'm going through this trouble. And I thought, you know, Karen's not here anymore. And I thought, no. I had to say no. And I thought, and then I had the friend who knew exactly what I was going through because he took care of his mother through cancer. And I think the beauty of it all is that the blessing, I guess, is that it makes me a little bit better and more sensitive. So, and it's not always grief either. It's tough times. Like I said, my friend who went through the heart thing, it's amazing how you go through this experience and it made me, well, you're a member of a club that nobody wants to be a member of, and then you become better at what you're contributing to your community, your friends, you know. You just do. I mean, and now I know what to say, and it kind of feels good that I can help someone else, and I can, you know, all these things happen, the dumbest things, to your best friends with the best heart, this close to compromising the entire friendship, and then you think, well, no, they mean well, and the learning takeaway has been really fascinating to me. So.
Excellent. All right, Alan, we're going to start back with you. How about, can you describe how someone or something helped you immensely in your grief?
Well, this is going to shock you, Sandy. Grief Share. When I started to attend Grief Share, it was the best thing because I was with people who understood what I was dealing with. And that was the best thing about it. I had people who knew what I was experiencing. Not only were the lessons excellent, and of course Sandy was the facilitator in February 2018 when I first started to attend, but being with people who understood, that was very helpful to me. And so I was looking forward to those Tuesday nights. When it was over, I was saying, I can't wait to get back here next Tuesday.
Excellent.
Grief Share was a big help to me.
Thank you. All right, Bob?
The third phone call I made when Ben's passing was one of my best friends at church, and they had lost a son 20 years ago to suicide. They lived in Manassas, 40 minutes away. They were at our house for 30 minutes. I got pulled over on the way. And the police officer, my friend Paul, was crying his eyes out. He says, you let her drive. She's not crying as hard. They were at our house every morning. Picked us up and took us wherever we needed to go. To the funeral home. Took us out to Winchester to pick up Ben's belongings.
They literally put their lives on hold for 2 weeks for us. Because they felt like they're paying it forward. People did that for them when their son passed 20 years prior. Yeah. And they said that it was a blessing to them because they felt like this was an opportunity that they had prayed for and waited for, that someday we're going to pay this forward and we're going to help somebody else.
Excellent. That's better than any note I could have given. Excellent. Melanie, what about you?
Again, we're back to the death of my son. And I had a friend who literally took me out of my house, she and her husband, and took me to their home. And I was in such shock that literally all night I paced from one end of the room to the other like a soldier on patrol, just back and forth and back and forth. And what they did was just go upstairs, they checked on me, they made certain I was okay, and then they came back down. and they didn't say anything. Later on, hours later, maybe there was some food that they would leave up there, but all they wanted to do was let me do what I needed to do. And that's it, dear friends. You just let me do what I needed to do in the moment. And then while all this was happening, it was the wife. She, what a blessing. She took one journal and she wrote down, she picked up the phone and she would handle, record all the phone calls, make all the arrangements for who's going to go pick up people from the airport, who's going to drive, who's going to house people, who's going to, everything she would take care of. So she took care of the practical things for me. They took care of practical things for me, helped me with things that I wasn't thinking about doing for myself, but they completely allowed me to do what I needed to do in that moment. And then the second person that really helped me was my cousin Alicia. And later on, she sent me one of those lap blankets, but it had footprints on it. The story of footprints, and I think you know it. And I literally put that on my wall in my bedroom, and the line that kept going on was, it was then that I carried you. It was then that I carried you, and I knew God was carrying me.
Excellent.
And so those were the two people that really helped me, practical and spiritual, and then, of course, our Lord.
Excellent.
And grief share. Don't forget grief share. Awesome.
Excellent. Helga, what about you?
I have a whole bucket full.
Choose one good one.
A former neighbor who visited my husband in the hospital. She lives 3 to 4 hours away from here. And she has never stopped coming. As a matter of fact, she's coming next week just to visit me to have a cup of coffee or lunch or whatever. But she's the sweetest woman and just coming just to visit me.
That's excellent. It's putting their life on hold, come and visit.
I have another story, and this is a stranger. My computer or the printer went out, and I bought a new printer. Neighbor helped me to, tried to help me to put it in for an hour. It didn't work. I took the printer back, and the person that had sold me asked me where I live. And he said, oh, there are not too many people here right now, there are customers. I'll come and help you. I mean, those stories, there are so many stories, and I call them angel stories. God sends them.
God sends it. Exactly. Michael, what about you?
I had friends schedule phone calls that were really nice. So it was like regular, I'm going to call you on a certain day every day and have a talk, or I'm going to come down and have coffee with you every morning on a certain day, just so I didn't sort of close up and become a recluse in my home. And the other thing, as Alan said about grief share, and a couple people other said, I was reluctant to do grief share, and then I think I did it two times, mm-hmm. like two classes. Because one of the interesting things, I thought, oh, I can handle this. I had a slow goodbye with my wife, so I thought I was going to handle it okay. But in reality, the grief share was giving me like what's ahead and around the corner, things that I didn't expect that were there. Because I'm thinking, why do I need this process? What do I need this for? I'm fine, or I'll be okay. And but that's just a little plug for grief share, the benefit of telling you what's coming up, what to be on the lookout for, how to handle it when it gets there, because it is a process, whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. It will be a process.
Excellent.
Cindy?
Yes.
I have to say that I've been in grief share for 5 years.
You've been involved with it. You haven't necessarily been coming to the classes. Yes, you're right.
With all these people.
Exactly. And it's a wonderful family. As Michael says, we say it's we're part of a club, of a member that we never, you know, wanted to be. But when you're there, it is different, and it salves your soul for as you say, the things that are coming up, and the wonderful support that everyone, and it's all biblically based. I just love that. Lastly,
a new one.
Huh?
I find new members too.
Oh yes, and bringing people, yes, definitely. Lastly, we have like 5 minutes left. With one sentence, everyone, try to with one sentence. What advice would you give to those in the audience for what to do for grievers to be a blessing and not a miserable comforter? Alan.
Just be there. Show up.
Okay, excellent. Bob?
Be willing to listen, not talk.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. Karen?
Yeah. Ditto. Just listen. Just listen. Be there. Let them cry. It's not that you did anything wrong.
Right.
They're going to cry.
You don't have to fix it. Exactly. Melanie?
It's not about you. It's about what they need.
Very good. Helga?
I try to call first before I go. I find that not just walk over.
Oh, no. Yeah. Call first. Yes.
Call first.
Excellent. All right. Michael?
Same thing with that. Pause, listen, think, and then tell them your skill set. I like that.
That
for me.
Good.
Then just tell someone, like, hey, here's how, and then let them decide how they want help from you. And then just sort of be quiet about it.
Excellent.
I like what Sandy said about ask them about their loved one if you didn't know them. They love to talk. We love to talk about ourselves.
Absolutely.
And people don't do that because they're afraid.
They're afraid.
Or something. And,
exactly.
Yeah. And to the woman that asked about, I think, I don't remember your name, if you're trying to think of something to do for someone that you maybe don't know real well and you suspect they might be a little hesitant, I think a lot of it is that because we're used to people just offering and it's, they don't know to trust you whether you're actually going to do it. You know, it's like, yeah, everybody says that. No, it's okay. Keep it simple and just come have coffee first. Get a foot in the door. And then they're going to see, wow, this person really is going to come and help me. Bring some things, some helpful items, and just sit and listen. And then they know that you really are going to follow through. You're not just saying it.
That is a good point because people, you know, just call me. We say that. And we mean it. It's just like when we pass people in the hall, how are you? Now, if they stood in for an hour and really told you how they were, we wouldn't be asking those questions anymore. It's the same thing with grief. You know, what can I do for you? We're just kind of tritely saying that. But to really mean it, say, let me just come. I'm going to have coffee and tell me about Peter or whatever. And then, okay, and then next week I'm going to take you grocery shopping. Let's go, you know, whatever. Good. That's a pattern that you're going to be that person because most people are not. So, well, I hope all these things were some interesting facts that you hadn't known before about grief and some things that could be helpful. You know, you're just showing love, and we all do it, you know, awkwardly at times, but those are just some little helps that, Nancy Guthrie and others and myself have learned over the years, and my panel, and I so thank you all for coming and being a blessing to others, and I hope that, you know, again, if you have anyone that needs grief share, we have flyers in the back. There are going to be video announcements coming up for them. And it's very easy, griefshare.org, just to sign up for our church. That starts in September. And you can stay as many times as you want, right? Some of you have come 2-3 times of cycles. Yeah.
Three?
There we go, 3.5. And COVID hit, right? COVID hit. We had to stop on that one. But, yeah, question.
Is Grief Share nationwide?
It's actually worldwide.
It is worldwide.
Yeah. So, yes, it's worldwide. Now, that doesn't mean they set up in churches. Like, you're not going to find it in a library or something. You know, they set up in churches. So, it doesn't mean every church has it. So, this is why if you go on the website, you can see the closest one. We meet on Thursday, so maybe that's not convenient for you. So, then you might find a local one. Like I said, I was over at Fairfax Church, but they were just ending, and I wanted to go to the next one. So, I found one in Alexandria, and I went there. And it was inconvenient because of traffic and whatnot. But it was a definite goal. So there's plenty of churches in this area. Pay attention, though, when you go, because some of them are strictly online. We will always be in person. I just find online, I just can't handle Zoom. I'm so distractible. So we love the being together as a group. So, but pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That folks might not know is that an experience I had at my church with a 40-year-old young man, married, children, was having a ridiculous time going through counseling at church, terrible family life, realized that probably 35 years earlier never grieved the loss of his father and stuffed it for about 40 years. And so I guess grief share is not necessarily for maybe an immediate grief. So he went through grief share, dramatically changed his family life, relationship with his kids and his wife, because they were going through like a marriage counseling. So grief share not necessarily for folks that have just had a recent loss. And you might talk to someone. I have a friend, and I thought, I'm thinking right now that, you know, 20 years ago, I don't know if he really ever grieved the loss of his mother. Because I see issues, you know, certain things as I've gotten to know him better. So just something to think about.
Absolutely. I've had in previous grief share a lady who hadn't dealt with the death of her husband for 20 years. And, you know, was always raising these, she had like six children, always raising the children. It was always about the children. It was never about herself. And she'd been grieving and going through so many mental problems for ages. And now we gave her permission. It's time to grieve. It's time to focus. It's okay to focus on you. So grief share does a lot.
Oh, I'm sorry. If I could add one thing. Mm-hmm. Because this was so amazing to me that I had a preconception of how a man would grieve. And, you know, women, we just show it. In grief share, the men talked about their grief. And I was so amazed because I heard their hearts for the first time that I never as a lady would have ever known the depth of the love and the grief and the hurt that was in their hearts. So this is not only for the women, the men are there and they talk and they share because it's such a comfortable place and a safe place to come. So
that's excellent. And we already have four men to sign up in September already. So yeah, it's not just for women. There may be more women than men, but you're right. Grief Share is such a wonderful program, and we're a safe place. It's a safe haven to come weekly, and so I love it. Obviously, that's why I've been doing this for so long, and this is why some folks take it for numerous times, because it's a safe haven where we can work through what the things are in our life. I'm going to ask my husband if you don't mind standing and closing because time to zip on.
Okay. Right. Father, thank you for this time together to learn about what to say and not say, what to do and not to do, and help our loved ones and friends who are going through grief. And we ask for your blessing on this wisdom that will restore it and use it, and someday someone we know might benefit from it. Thank you for Sandy's service in this, the panel being here today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, panel. I appreciate you being my friend. Thank you, everyone. Have a blessed day in the Lord. Thanks for coming.